time now for World Watchers International with Maid Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Maid.
Good evening. This is Maid Brussel in Carmel, California. This is broadcast number 460, September 28th, 1980. And side one of the tape, if you are taping this program, or for those that get the tapes by subscription. If you want information on how to get past tapes, broadcasts, or current ones, or to subscribe to the series and own the cassettes, write to me at Post Office Box 22511, Carmel 93922, and I'll send you a list of past tapes going back to 1977. If you want them that far back, and you can select the subjects you're interested in. A few moments of discussion this evening, just a few on the Middle East crisis that's been developing the last few weeks. It flared up, and it seems to be calming, at least in the news this evening when I came to the studio. What we're witnessing in the Middle East is a no-win dilemma that I've been talking about, the dilemma since the hostages were taken. It's the sum total of all the mistakes of foreign policies that the United States and Great Britain and France, particularly Great Britain and the United States, have made in the Middle East in the past 60 years. It's the legacy of people like John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles, Herbert Hoover, and many others who believed that the earth was ours to divide up for business and profit, and that people basically are expendable. And with that in mind, we sell arms and weapons to everybody and anybody and hope that if they just use them up fighting each other, we'll come out on top. But in the Middle East, where you have a large population that has never been studied by the United States, the Muslim people, or even in Asia, the Chinese people and the African people, Americans are not educated to understand the similarities of all these people with us. We're taught some of the differences, or mainly if we don't eat all our dinner, somebody in China is going to starve. That's about the extent of the social studies when we're growing up, or if we go to the beach and dig deep enough, we'll get to China. Outside of that, the mentality and the psychology and needs of those people are never fully understood, and therefore we make weapons to give to each of these countries as if they were little toys, and then think that something fruitful can come of all of that, and it doesn't. When the hostages were taken in Iran, we were impotent, we still are, to move one way or the other. There was an article in the New York News today, the U.S. has 8 reasons for not siding with Iraq, and I think the listing of those reasons are indicative of how we backed ourselves into this dilemma and how unable we are ever going to be to unwind the situation, at least the way that we're used to doing, of throwing in troops and fighting hand to hand. We can't do it in the Middle East. This article suggests that the collapse of Iran would shift the balance of power in the Middle East and Persian Gulf region. The balance is already shifted. When we depend upon oil and don't develop other energy sources, the only thing we can think to do is to go in, even with atomic weapons, and grab it. That just won't work any longer, and the balance of power has shifted out of the hands of the United States into the Middle East, and we sit and watch scared, you know, will our oil be cut off or not? Should we send in the planes? What should we do? Second reason for staying out of Iraq was that victory on the part of Iraq against Iran would increase the prestige of the Iraqi radical leaders in the Arab world and would sponsor terrorism against Israel and Egypt. We already have funded these countries, Syria and Iraq and Libya. We funded Egypt and Israel, Saudi Arabia. The United States has supplied weapons to all of the countries. We've supported the terrorists. As I mentioned last week, we supported the PLO and the Arab group, the CIA funded, that killed the Israeli athletes in Munich, funded radical movements of Baader-Meinhof, the FALN, the SLA, which was a pseudo-radical group made up by the CIA here, but the international terrorism of Carlos, and I'll go into that a little bit, this Carlos the terrorist from Venezuela. Just this week, Jack Anderson came out with an article on how the CIA saved Carlos. If Anderson told the complete story, we armed Carlos and allowed his killings and massacres and the bombings at airports and the Japanese Red Brigade and so forth, were all American CIA and Pentagon they were funding the terrorists and proclaiming terrorism as so dangerous that we had to increase our international police to combat them while we were arming them. So we have sponsored terrorism, and they know it, and that's why they're free to take any step they want, forward or backward, because they know that we have funded them before. Another reason for staying out of the fight, at least overtly, is that the President Hussein, the Iraqi president, may be willing to subvert the monarchy of Saudi Arabia and other oil-producing states. That's a dangerous problem. Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter would go in and support the Saudi Arabian monarchy, but the monarchies are probably as far out or going out as fast as Somoza or the Shah of Iran. Someday, because of their greed and the way they reign, they will be kicked out, and then the United States economy will fall to the investments all over the United States and all over the world will be in jeopardy if the land is taken by the people. And we've supported the wrong people in every country wherever we had a choice, and we have to face that consequence. Another explanation for not going in was that the United States wants to see the flow of oil from both Iran and Iraq resume as quickly as possible. It is that fact, the need for oil, that makes us so dependent that we can't take any step, and we have to stay off and watch whatever happens in the Middle East now, because we are dependent on that oil and, as I say, haven't developed our other energy sources. Another excuse is that Iraq, along with Libya and South Yemen, refuse to recognize Israel's right to exist. They're the only three nations that adhere to that position, and therefore we can't overtly help Iraq. But the Friends of the Middle East and John Connolly and the Clint Murchisons and the Texas oil men and Exxon and so forth, under the Friends of the Middle East and the CIA, have funded these organizations that have poked holes in Israel. Overtly, they support Israel, and not even so overtly, but under the table, they have supported all of these radical groups, so that whether they gang together and go against Israel today or 10 years from now, the United States has armed these people knowing that that was their intent. Another argument is that Iraq is distanced from the Soviet Union, and if we interfere with them, they will press the United States to remove troops from Portugal, Spain, Greece, and Turkey. When the United States becomes so dependent upon oil, then the Middle Eastern countries can dictate us to us, get out of Greece, get out of Turkey, get out of Spain and Portugal. So long as we have armed them, so long as we have supported the terrorists, so long as we have looked the other way and allowed people like Carlos to do multiple assassinations and murders, they own us just through blackmail alone and through oil, so that oil and blackmail make us totally dependent upon whatever move they make, we have to go along with. And then another argument was that Iraq victory over Iran would assure the death of the hostages. I don't think the hostages will be killed, but we've armed every country in the Middle East. We hope they'll sell us oil. We hope they won't line up with the Soviet Union. And now we have to sit immobilized and just wait upon their decisions of what moves they're going to take next. Interesting articles in the paper this week. One, Ronald Reagan says Carter's to blame for the Iran-Iraq war, that we should have kept the Shah in. I don't think it's up to the United States to make decisions who should be the head of state of every country. And it's that mentality of Reagan that goes back to the John Foster Dulles, Allen Dulles, Herbert Hoover mentality, the foreign advisors of Reagan that think if we keep the Shah in, we will control the Middle East. Those days are over. One man isn't going to take care of a whole area for us. And if his savak and secret police are not wanted, there's no amount of police that are going to be able to support the puppets that we put in. Eventually, they're going to have to topple, and the United States will topple with them. There was another article in the San Jose Mercury this week. Iranian students at Stanford believe that the U.S. is helping Iraq. The Iranian students said the fact is that the United States is really behind the war. It's supporting many Iranian exiles who are helping Iraq needle Iran. The United States wants to divide up Iran into three main sections that they mentioned. The ultimate aim is the Persian Gulf, the oil. Another article, this is from Germany, UPI, 70,000 exiled Iranians are ready to pounce upon Iran. They're in West Germany, that's our ally, a NATO country. Jimmy Carter says we'll stay aloof, we won't interfere in the Middle East, and yet we work with the NATO country, and over there there's a group of Iranians in exile some 45,000 soldiers who are waiting to go over the border and recapture the country. They worked with the twin sister of the late Shah of Iran, the Princess Ashraf, in Paris, and they're hoping someday that they'll all be over and they can get it back into Iran and get their country back in their hands. When they finally arrive over there, I believe that there will be bloody warfare, and it will be on the hands and conscience or mind of the United States that set up that puppet government, got rid of Mossadegh, and took the oil for the American corporations, Standard Oil, Exxon, Morgan Guaranty Trust, Chase Manhattan, the large United States banking firms, and the intelligence community thought that in return for putting a man on the throne and giving him all the weapons he needed to stay on that throne, he would invest money in America, sell us his oil. And by manipulating these people with our desires for business and profit and calling it national security, we've put ourselves in this position. This country would be much more secure if we did the right thing sometimes, because it's the wrong things that are leading us to national insecurity all over the world. I just have a few headlines of this week's news that I thought were horrendous, and I thought I'd just run them down real fast. The most pathetic thing is the trial of Kim Dae-jung, I guess you pronounce it, in Korea. He's been given the death penalty, and there are many articles deploring the fact that this man might be hung for his position in trying to get an elected government into power in Korea. We sent soldiers over there in 1950. The United States supported a war in South Korea that worked itself into a military dictatorship, and agents were paying off our members of Congress and still are so heavily that we really have no control over the South Korean government. There's an article in the New York Times this week saying that the position of the military court in sentencing this man to be hung demonstrates the bankruptcy of the United States policy towards South Korea, an article by Jerome Allen Cohn, that Jimmy Carter talked about human rights and so forth, and here is a General Chun Doo-hwang, who literally shot his way to power, violated the United Nations command structure, took illegitimate use of troops for his own sake, jailed Mr. Kim to prevent widely popular presidential elections, and now has ordered Mr. Kim to be hung. His only crime was that in 1971, he almost unseated Mr. Park. The new president of South Korea doesn't want that kind of competition and has ordered Kim Dae-jung to be hung. If that is allowed, that means that the puppet governments that America puts into power, such as Mr. Pinochet in Chile, allowing Allende to be murdered, and the American corporations having a large part in the role of the murder of Allende, and then Mr. Park being killed in Korea, and this fascist dictator taking over South Korea, it means that the American policy has totally failed in terms of anything that the American dream or goals or aim was in terms of democratic government, that we have allowed dictatorships in many countries, approximately 77, to go into power and supported them with the weapons and the necessary instruments to keep their power and keep people enslaved in those countries. The Somoza killing that I talked about last week is still not solved, except for the one Lee Harvey Oswald type patsy that was shot on the spot. And again, it gives an excuse to go into the labor leaders and round up people in Argentina and in Paraguay, political activists, on the possibility that they killed Somoza. They sacrificed Somoza at this time and could continue to round up political activists. Ronald Reagan was asked why his top aides were around South America with the dictators. This was in the New York Times. And one top aide, Roger Fontaine, talked about being in Chile and how he wants to strengthen the ties between Argentina, Chile, and South Africa. That's just what we need, is Argentina, Chile, Brazil, and South Africa in an alliance. Reagan's advisors want a closer cooperation of those countries, and also they would include Mexico. They said the only country that would be treated as an enemy by Ronald Reagan would be Cuba. And here's a quotation from Mr. Fontaine, his aide. He said, "We must maintain our interest in promoting democracy without getting disillusioned if there is a military coup in Honduras. The United States cannot be the judge of the whole world and of the Americas in particular. We keep reprimanding other republics because they misbehave." This is where hundreds of thousands of people are murdered and missing and tortured, and he uses the word misbehave. And Reagan's advisor went on to say that he wouldn't cut off support from Bolivia, the new military dictatorship, as Jimmy Carter did, that he would go along in a more passive way and not criticize them for taking power the way they did, overthrowing an elected government just a few months later and putting in a military dictatorship. Mr. Reagan's advisor said, in quotes, "Democracy in some cases can be instituted too rapidly." And he used Bolivia as an example. You want me to talk about presidential candidates? I think this gives you an inkling of what Ronald Reagan thinks and what will happen if he's president of the United States. He will approve of every military dictatorship, put down the labor movements, call all the activists radicals and communists, and allow them to be decimated, wiped out, while the heads of states take away the freedom of the press and free speech in all of these countries. Daniel Ellsberg was on the Monterey Peninsula this week talking to the Bar Association. He said the country hasn't been told the first full story of nuclear accidents, that there have been at least 30 serious accidents that could have led to nuclear explosions in this country. He knew about them when he worked for RAND Corporation, and once again, the government is lying. The court in Chicago told the families of the DC-10 that crash in Chicago in 1979 that they could be awarded damages. There's over 100 lawsuits against the DC-10 airline, the airline that made this airplane. And the condition was that they had to prove that the passengers suffered seconds before their death. The U.S. District Court Judge Herbert L. Hill said it would be difficult to prove this because there were no survivors. But if anyone could prove that a member of their family suffered before he or she died, they'd consider the case. But Illinois isn't bound to any court settlements if they can't prove that the person suffered. And being as the plane crashed and all of these people went instantly when it blew up, 274 people, it's up to the family to prove that in the last 10 seconds they suffered. And as there are no witnesses, what a catch-22 that is. In terms of employment in Maryland this week, there's a Social Security opening, 75 jobs, and 26,200 people applied for 75 jobs. The University of California voted to keep the laboratories open to nuclear research. Governor Brown tried to stop it. He said out here that this Lawrence Livermore lab has a laboratory that does what it wants. It's free of university control. It's free of state control. It's cannot be controlled by the President of the United States or government high officials or Congress. Another article out of Damascus, Arkansas. One gentleman was in trouble 2 years ago. There was a big orange cloud from the same missile silo that exploded just a few weeks ago. 20 of his cows died. He had severe headaches, and then he was hospitalized 30 times in the last 32 months. Terribly ill and suffering a second time from the exposure. Their panel of scientists are clashing over cloning. At the University of California, I mentioned that briefly once before, down in La Jolla, a Dr. Kennedy was making a virus. They didn't know whether he was doing it deliberately or by mistake or keeping poor records or having lapse of memory, but he was cloning some dangerous viruses with discrepancies in laboratory experiments, and four people that worked in the lab told about him because they felt their life was in danger or he was endangering people, and they've left the lab to work somewhere else. An article about the suicide of James Dallas Egbert III. I never did talk about that brilliant student that was missing from Detroit, Michigan. He went on down to Texas. There was a big secret about this boy. He had a high IQ listed at 145. Now there's an article that came out in the New York Times. Youth suicide may lead to help to other children who are brilliant but troubled. I knew there was more to the Egbert story. There were a lot of secrets of where he was when he was missing and who he was with and how the Dallas, Texas investigator found him. But after he got back to Detroit, he was dead this summer with a bullet in his brain. Now they're saying that he's a springboard for research and that they're going to test a lot of children. High percentage of children that are dropouts are gifted, that these gifted children show signs of it by the third grade, and they're quoting Lewis Terman from Stanford with his gifted children's test. I think of the testing of the Whitman boys' brains in Texas after the shooting at the tower there as an excuse for Dr. Irvin and Dr. Mark and Sweet to test the brains of bright people, scientists, inventors, blacks, to see what causes violence, not social conditions, and so forth. So it seems that this young person who died attending the university very young is what they called a springboard for research. So from there, whatever mysteries were going on with his poor Egbert, he's now going to be the subject excuse for studying young people and their brains, and goodness knows what these studies will entail. Speaking of bright people, there's a mail order now catalog for Nobel sperm you can order. You can breed superior children and become impregnated. You have to prove at the Germinal Choice in Escondido, California, that you have a high IQ. And if you have a high IQ and belong to Mensa, a club for people with the highest IQs, you're eligible for the recipient of free Nobelist sperm. This woman in New York who wrote, "I'm well-adjusted, childless, and I'm a Mensa woman," Mensa meaning she's passed the IQ test. She's a Yale lawyer who wants the sperm of a Nobel scientist. It's free for ordering from a catalog if you have the IQ. Los Angeles is afraid of toxic waste. They're now worrying about where the lifeguards are at the beach and also other parts of town. There's 11 existing places of landfill where people are getting leukemia. A lifeguard at the beach, a storm drain that was filled with contaminated chemicals, and the lifeguards are getting cancer. It seems that in Whittier and other places in Los Angeles County, there was a multi-million dollar commercial service that was supposed to dispose of hazardous waste 2 years ago, and they were supposed to have their license revoked, and it wasn't revoked. Now the cost of the cleanup is into millions into West Covina and at the beach at Whittier. Goodness knows about the people swimming in the beach as well as the lifeguards. Another article this week, U.S. airmen buoyed by readiness gains. Units in West Germany are having a high percentage of planes. They're ready for combat for World War III. They're using F-15s, F-16s, F-4G, EF-111s. Every weapon has a letter and a number and squadron, and they're flying and dropping out of the air, and they're already testing for World War III. I really just can't imagine the mentality of people getting ready for this each new generation, but it does happen, and that's why I'm reading you these headlines. Peking police want equipment from the United States. One more dictatorship. A New York Times article says they want to fight crime. They want to buy from our laboratory equipment, the special police. The Chinese government still has entrenched patterns of harassment, arbitrary arrests, police punishment, harsh punishment, no trial, no political dissent. Prisoners are taken to large remote areas, large prison system, numerous labor camps. The police system monitors political activity of Chinese citizens, and they make fun of the slogan human rights. They say that's a bourgeois slogan. They've now asked the United States to supply them with the police techniques that we have given to all the other countries like Costa Rica and Panama and Chile and Uruguay and Paraguay and Bolivia and Argentina and you name it. We've sent police torture equipment for interrogation all over the world, manufactured in the United States of America, and now Beijing, China, wants the equipment. They claim if we have a fingerprinting process, we won't have to squeal out of them with torture a confession. We can find out whether they're guilty or not. Just send us your fingerprinting process and the technology, and we can then find the criminal. Well, it's sort of very much like solving the Kennedy assassination or any other murders in the United States. When fingerprints don't match or aren't visible on a weapon, such as Lee Harvey Oswald had, when there's no fingerprints, they just say he killed the president anyway. You don't need fingerprints in this country to solve a crime. You just kill the defendant 2 days after he's charged with the crime, and there's no physical evidence to link him to the crime. So if it works here, it works in China, and you don't have to ship equipment back and forth. Another article, Ronald Reagan doesn't want any more debates. He's through debating. He refuses to meet Jimmy Carter one-on-one. Another article on toxic shock, tampons giving cancer, the Tampax giving cancer. We export Nestle's formula all over the world that is taking the lives of babies in impoverished third world countries. We send Trish, that fabric that causes cancer, out of the country, and it's not allowed here, so we send it to the poor all over the world, and now Tampax is causing fatal diseases. I have one basic rule about clothing or anything on my body. It's either cotton, wool, linen, and silk, and that's it. No synthetics. I've never had them. I don't own them, and you shouldn't either. Just stick to the basics and stay away from as many synthetics as you can. It's hunting season in this country. It's getting more overt. I remember at the time when Mr. Oaks, the Indian leader, was shot in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and the defendant said he was told by the police it was open hunting season for niggers and Indians. Article just this week, Associated Press, Buffalo, New York, is hunting the gunman of blacks. A white killer's on the loose. He is shooting. He shot three black men and a black teenager. They have a feeling that he's out for black people, that he's killing at random. This is the cover line always. He's killing at random, but he has seems to be a person with a hatred for black men. Now, random killing, we're getting random shootings and attempted murders in San Francisco and other cities. The word random isn't right. They're shooting for blacks. Random is when you don't make a choice. But when you specifically go for blacks, that isn't random killing. It may mean you don't care which black you kill, but it still has a specific goal that you want. Just as when Dr. Marcus Foster was killed by the SLA, he was black, he died, he had cyanide bullet. His companion, who was white, had a regular bullet and survived. They didn't intend for the black man to live. There were several joggers in Salt Lake City last week, no, it was about 3 weeks ago, that were gunned down. Again, a random killing. The only thing that was unusual about it, and it's never been solved, was that the people that were murdered were black, and the man, or the persons that shot at them, the police believed were white. They were joggers, and they were killed in Salt Lake City. There's a trial going on in Oakland now of a woman who killed a small black boy, and she said she wanted to eat black children. She hated them so much, she wanted to eat them. At first, the press was kept out of the trial, and then the story came out of her intense hatred of black people. Another article, well, I mentioned before, the sniper in San Francisco. Second sniper attack on Muni bus. Picture of Eddie Wells, a black man. The San Francisco Chronicle says the sniping appears to be a random thing. He was running his bus along the usual line when somebody just shot at him, and earlier in the week somebody was shooting at a Muni bus, also airport bus carrying passengers, and they were shooting superficial head wounds at the driver. Again, as I say, it's a random shooting, but the victims are black. Another story, Hearst land yields pot, San Luis Obispo. The Hearst Ranch, Randolph Hearst Ranch in San Simeon, there was a pot cachet they were growing, as if there isn't enough money or time to get your grass somewhere else. They discovered crops at the Hearst Castle, a 500-plant field valued at $200,000. And at the same time, a while ago, just next to there was a $1.2 million field next to the Hearst property of marijuana. So they're kind of petty, just a $30,000 crop arrest at this time. But it's strange that they have to have this growing on the territory. You'd think that that wouldn't really be necessary. Fidel Castro is angry because in Venezuela, the court decision was to acquit four men accused of bombing a Cuban airline. 73 people were killed in 1976. The Cuban airline was the anti-Castro Cubans admitted they blew up the airplane, and the courts in Venezuela acquitted the four suspects, including Dr. Orlando Bosch, who works with the anti-Castro Cubans and the CIA that were part of the Letelier Ronnie Moffitt murder that I mentioned last week, the anniversary of their murder just last week, September 21st. Castro has pulled out his agents from Venezuela, and he's very angry, and rightfully so. You see, the courts aren't working, and these people are just walking away. These so-called terrorists, the terror on the right, are not going into courts anywhere in the world. They're walking out of France, England, Germany, Venezuela, the United States, free to do more killings. It's 30 minutes now. I'm going to take a break so you can turn your cassette over and we can arrange to do that with ours. And I'll be back on the air in about 30 seconds.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.